You know, when we talk about making Deer Park, LaPorte, and Pasadena better places to live, it feels like it almost always comes back to how we get around, right?
Absolutely. Our streets, the traffic, just feeling safe moving through our community. It's so fundamental.
It really is. And for this deep dive, we've got some really interesting material. It's audio from a conference presentation by Chuck Marone. He's an expert in transportation land use. He was actually speaking to transportation professionals out in Kansas. But the thing is, even though the context is Kansas, not Southeast Houston, the core ideas about how our streets, our whole transportation system, how they're designed, they have huge implications for safety, for community well-being everywhere, including right here.
That's the key takeaway, isn't it? The principles are universal. How we shape our environment affects our daily lives, our safety, no matter where we are.
Exactly. So the goal today, our mission, if you like, is to pull out those key insights from Marone's talk, those nuggets that can help us, residents right here in Deer Park, LaPorte, and Pasadena, think differently about our local streets, about getting around safely.
Okay, let's get into it.
Right. So one of the first big ideas Marone brings up is this concept of the driving environment being designed essentially as the driver's exclusive domain.
Yeah, and he breaks down how that happens. Things like, really wide lanes, those big shoulders on the side of the road, even how the street lights are set up, the markings on the pavement. It all sends this signal to the driver, this space is for you, go fast.
It creates this feeling of ownership, almost like it's your private territory when you're behind the wheel. And here's where it gets interesting. Marone says when other things intrude on that space, like a bike lane suddenly appearing or a pedestrian trying to cross or even just another car pulling out, it causes this kind of dissonance, this frustration, even in people who are normally pretty patient.
It disrupts that feeling of exclusive control the design gave them. And while, yeah, aggressive driving is a real thing, his point is the environment itself might be feeding that frustration.
He uses a really interesting analogy to drive this home. Disney theme parks.
Which sounds totally unrelated at first, I know.
Right. But think about how Disney designs things. Those long lines waiting for rides.
They make them wind around, add little things to look at, pre-shows.
Exactly. It's all intentionally designed to manage your experience, to reduce frustration, make it more, well, human, even while they're, managing huge crowds.
So they're designing the environment to shape your behavior, your feelings in a specific way.
Now, contrast that with driving. We get in our comfy cars, maybe put on our music,
Yeah, our little bubble.
and we see these wide open roads, seemingly designed for easy travel. But then, bam, traffic lights, other cars cutting in, someone trying to walk across. It constantly interrupts that expectation.
And he references a book, The Architecture of Reassurance. It talks about how spaces make us feel calm or anxious. Marone argues our driving environments are often the exact opposite of reassuring.
They build an expectation of smooth sailing and then constantly break it. Creates tension.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It made me think of, well, there's an old Louis C.K. bit, maybe not safe for work search, but
Okay.
his point was how differently people act in their cars, honking, yelling, compared to, say, an elevator. We'd never do that face to face.
Right. That isolation, that perceived purpose of the car space, it changes things.
And Marone takes this idea even further. He draws a parallel and he asks for some generosity here. He compares it to understanding maybe why people in really tough situations, like conflict zones or high crime areas, might act out negatively when their environment offers no good options.
Wow. Okay. That's a big leap, but I see the thread.
The core idea is just our surroundings powerfully shape our behavior. If a space isn't designed well, if it creates friction or danger,
that can lead to negative outcomes. And just punishing the individual doesn't fix the underlying environmental problem.
which brings it right back here to Deer Park, LaPorte, Pasadena. Are we designing streets that inadvertently create anxiety, create aggression?
It forces us to look beyond just blaming bad drivers, doesn't it? We have to look at the context they're driving in.
He tells this story about a Towards Zero Deaths campaign, you know, those safety initiatives.
Seen those?
It was at his kids' high school football game. They're handing out t-shirts, slogans, all well-intentioned. But then think about after the game. Everyone trying to leave at once, probably jammed onto these wide, fast roads.
Yeah, the design itself creates a stressful, potentially dangerous situation right after the safety message. It's kind of ironic.
It really highlights how we tend to focus on like messaging or maybe even shaming drivers.
Instead of fixing the design that's contributing to the problem in the first place.
And this leads into a pretty provocative stance on where safety efforts should go. He basically argues, like, 98% of the focus should be on making the streets safer through design, and maybe only 2% on driver education and vehicle safety tech. Less important than we think.
Wow, 98% on streets. That's a big shift from how we usually talk about it. Usually it's education, enforcement, engineering. Maybe equally.
Right. He even shares this funny story about fighting his car's lane-keeping assist, just trying to change lanes normally.
Yeah, sometimes those features can be more annoying than helpful.
And he mentions John Adams' book, Risk, which had that really controversial idea that seatbelt laws might have unintentionally led to more aggressive driving because people felt safer.
Okay, now hold on. That's a really debated point.
Oh, for sure. And Marone clarifies, you know, he wears a seatbelt, believes in airbags, they're net positives, but he's questioning if we're putting too much faith in the vehicle itself versus the environment.
So less focus on making the car crash-proof, more on making the crash less likely to happen at all through better street design.
Exactly. Are we maybe over-relying on tech fixes instead of fundamental design principles?
He then quotes, or paraphrases, Donald Rumsfeld, interestingly enough.
Yeah.
We design roads for the people we have, not the people we wish we had.
Hmm.
His point is that engineering kind of accepted this with forgiving design on highways, making roadsides safer if someone does make a mistake.
Right. Clear zones, gentler slopes.
But we seem to have forgotten that principle when it comes to our local streets inside our communities, where people walk, bike, live.
That's powerful. Design for real people who make mistakes get distracted.
Yeah.
Not some perfect robotic driver. Especially here, on the streets we use every day in Deer Park, LaPorte, Pasadena.
It has to be about reality, not just theory.
Which inevitably brings up the human cost when things go wrong.
Yeah.
He references a Strongtown story about a pedestrian fatality.
Yeah, those are always tough to hear about.
And that feeling of there but for the grace of God. How common these tragedies actually are.
It really hits home.
And he taps into that feeling of powerlessness that a lot of us feel.
Mm.
We see unsafe situations, we worry.
And even local officials, they often want to fix things too, but they get caught up in, you know, the bureaucracy. Long studies, waiting for DOT approval, funding battles.
Right, he's critical of that system. It can feel slow, unresponsive, and often defaults to blaming the human involved rather than fixing the potential design flaws.
Which circles back to that statistic, the 2015 U.S. DOT study saying 94% of crashes were due to driver error.
Yeah, that's the traditional view, right? Driver messed up, end of story.
But Marone argues that's the incorrect way to approach the problem. It's too simple. Yes, drivers make mistakes, but framing it as the only cause misses the bigger picture.
He lays out this myth versus reality comparison. Things like myth. Crashes are just driver mistakes. Reality. Lots of factors contribute.
Myth. Crashes are random, unavoidable accidents. Reality. They result from factors we can actually address.
Myth. Streets are safe. People use them dangerously. Reality. Streets themselves can be designed dangerously.
And importantly, myth. Cities are powerless to make streets safer. Reality. Cities actually have many options.
That Chernobyl analogy he used was really effective, I thought.
Explain that again.
Well, yeah, an operator made a mistake at Chernobyl. But that mistake only became catastrophic because of a whole chain of other things. Flawed reactor design, systemic issues, lack of safety culture.
Ah, right. So blaming just the operator misses all the other contributing causes that made the disaster possible.
Exactly. And focusing only on driver error in a crash does the same thing. It ignores the role of road design, visibility, speed limits, everything else.
Okay, so if that's the wrong way, what's the right way?
This is where he brings in the medical world's morbidity and mortality conference idea, or the M&M conference, as his contact called it.
Right, the M&M conference. I've heard of those.
So in hospitals, when something goes wrong, a bad outcome for a patient, they get everyone involved together. Doctors, nurses, technicians, even like the janitor who might have seen something.
And the goal isn't to point fingers or assign blame for lawsuits, right?
No, not at all. The goal is pure learning. What exactly happened? What were all the contributing factors, big and small? Communication breakdowns, equipment issues, room layout, everything.
So they can figure out how to prevent it from ever happening again.
Precisely. Now contrast that with how we usually investigate crashes. It's mostly about assigning fault for insurance or legal reasons, with someone speeding, drunk, texting.
It serves a different purpose. It's about liability, not necessarily prevention.
And he makes this interesting point about lawsuits. The medical field uses this blame-free M&M analysis despite facing tons of litigation.
Whereas in engineering, sometimes there's this fear that digging into potential design flaws after a crash will invite lawsuits against the city.
Even though in many places, cities have statutory immunity for design decisions, specifically to encourage them to fix problems in the public interest without constant fear of liability.
That immunity is supposed to empower action, not paralyze it.
So building on this M&M idea, Strong Towns launched their crash analysis studio in 2023.
Okay, tell me about that.
It's basically trying to apply that same blame-free deep dive analysis to traffic crashes. They work with their local conversations. These are groups of regular citizens, advocates, working in their own towns.
Like people right here in Deer Park, LaPorte, or Pasadena could potentially do.
Exactly. These local groups get trained to gather really detailed data on specific crashes. Not just the police report, but doing their own speed studies, taking measurements, photos, talking to people.
Getting the ground truth.
Then they bring together a panel. And this is key. It includes technical experts, sure, planners, engineers.
But also neighborhood experts. People who live there, walk there, know the place intimately.
Right, like the janitor in the hospital analogy.
Yeah.
Those folks often see things the technical drawings miss. They know where the sun glare is bad, where people actually cross the street.
That local knowledge is invaluable.
They've done 18 of these case studies now. They're all online. Really detailed looks at specific crashes.
And what did they find? Are there common themes?
Definitely. They compiled the findings into a report called Beyond Blame: How Cities Can Learn from Crashes to Create Safer Streets Today. You can find it if you search Strong Towns Beyond Blame.
Okay, Strong Towns Beyond Blame. Got it. What are the big takeaways?
Several key things kept popping up. One, high-speed roads slicing through urban areas. That's a recipe for trouble.
No surprise there, really. Right. Speed is a major factor.
Two, inadequate facilities for walking and biking. He mentioned an example where a fence literally funneled pedestrians towards a really awkward, badly placed crossing button.
Ugh, designs that just don't consider people outside of cars.
Three, dangerous intersection design, especially those wide-open intersections that feel like highways and encourage speed right where things are most complex. The design needs to slow traffic before the conflict point.
Makes sense. Slow them down before they get into the mix.
And four, widespread visibility and lighting problems, especially for pedestrians and cyclists at night. Lights are often aimed for cars, leaving walkways and bike lanes in shadow.
Yeah, that's a huge issue. If drivers can't see people, they can't avoid them.
So based on all this, the Beyond Blame report gives cities six main recommendations.
Okay, let's hear them.
First, make safety a core value, an organizational responsibility, not just one person's job or an afterthought.
Embed it everywhere. Got it.
Second, set up municipal crash response teams focused on data collection for analysis, not just the standard police report for insurance.
Deeper data gathering for prevention. Makes sense.
Third, don't be afraid to use quick, temporary fixes. Tactical urbanism stuff, put out cones, temporary bump outs, test things immediately. Don't wait years for a full study. Use that plan, do, study, act cycle engineers already know.
Be nimble, learn quickly. I like that.
Fourth, update local street standards. Prioritize safety explicitly. Don't just default to standards like the MUTCD that often prioritize vehicle speed. Develop actual street standards for your community.
Tailor it to the local context. Prioritize safety.
Yes.
Fifth, do post-project audits specifically for biking and walking. Go out and experience it. Don't just do a drive-through audit.
See how it actually works for everyone. Crucial.
And sixth, the call to action. Check out strongtowns.org/studio. See the examples. Take the free course on how to do this analysis.
So this is directly applicable for folks listening in Deer Park, LaPorte, Pasadena. Go to strongtowns.org/studio.
Absolutely. You can see how other communities have done it. Learn the methodology. Imagine a local group here, maybe even the city staff, using this approach after a serious crash.
It could really change the conversation from whose fault was it to how do we prevent this from happening again?
Exactly. Marone does mention, though, that sometimes cities are hesitant. Fear of liability, looking bad.
Even with statutory immunity.
Yeah. But his point is, ignoring problems doesn't reduce liability. Learning from crashes and fixing things demonstrably makes the city safer, which should ultimately reduce liability over time. It shows due diligence.
It's proactive risk management, really.
He then critiques the standard engineering design process for streets, how it often starts.
How does it usually go?
Typically. Figure out the desired design speed, then estimate the traffic volume, then consult the design manuals to build something considered safe for that speed and volume, and then figure out the cost.
So speed and volume often come first in the sequence?
That's his point. safety becomes a constraint within those parameters rather than the primary goal itself, especially on local streets.
Okay, I see the issue there. The priorities might be inverted from what residents actually want.
He does this thought experiment. If you were designing your street, what's most important? Speed, volume, safety, cost.
Most people would say safety first, right? Maybe cost second.
Almost always. Then he asks, okay, speed or volume next? And it really shows how the public's values often clash with the embedded priorities of that traditional process.
So the conclusion is we need to flip it.
Essentially, yes. On our streets, again, not highways, but the roads within our communities, we need to consciously deprioritize vehicle speed. We need to be willing to trade some traffic flow efficiency for significantly better safety outcomes for everyone.
That's a big mental shift for how we think about roads, but crucial for places like Deer Park, La Porte, and Pasadena.
It's something to remember in any local meeting about a road project. What are the real priorities here?
Does he offer alternatives? Different ways to design?
He touches on a couple. Roundabouts, for instance. But he notes many American roundabouts are still kind of overbuilt for speed.
Unlike some European ones that really force you to slow way down before you enter.
Right. And he talks about shared spaces. He mentions a video, Point and Reimagined, POYNTON.
Shared spaces. What's that?
It's where they basically remove almost all the markings, signs, signals. It forces everyone, drivers, pedestrians, cyclists, to slow way down and actually look at each other, negotiate the space carefully.
Wow. That sounds chaotic, but maybe safer because everyone's hyper-aware.
Apparently, it works remarkably well in the right contexts. Forces human interaction over engineered separation. He says, look it up on YouTube.
Point and reimagine. Okay, I will.
And he zooms out a bit, connects transportation to the bigger picture, especially time. He argues that our constant focus on building more capacity, more lanes to save time, often just pushes destinations further apart. Like schools getting built on cheap land way out on the edge of town.
So we drive faster, but further, and don't actually save time overall, and lose connectivity.
Pretty much. He argues the real way to save people time isn't faster roads, it's closer destinations. Building walkable neighborhoods where you don't need to drive for every little thing. Bring back the corner store.
Build better places, not just faster roads between them.
He shares his own story about moving into town, walking more, the lifestyle benefits. This really connects with our Think and Act Locally idea here, improving life right where we are in Deer Park, La Porte, in Pasadena.
It's about community design, not just transportation engineering.
He even frames it as like make America healthy again. Building walkable places is prudent, saves money on gas and car infrastructure.
It's fiscally conservative in a way.
His wrap-up thought on this is pretty profound. For most of history, humans built human habitat places scaled to walking.
Yeah. Cities were built around people, not cars.
It's only recently, driven by certain economic ideas, that we started building these sprawling, car-dependent places that, frankly, don't make a lot of inherent sense for human thriving.
A historical perspective really puts our current situation in context.
So the final push, the call to action, again, especially for our listeners here, go to strongtowns.org/studio.
Learn about this beyond blame approach. See the case studies. Take the free course. Get involved.
Understand the root causes so we can actually start making Deer Park, La Porte, and Pasadena safer and better places to live, work, and move around. And hey, if you find value in deep dives like this one, focusing on our local communities, please consider supporting the show at thinkandactlocally.com/donate. There's a link in the show notes.
That support helps keep these local conversations going.
Okay, so the main takeaway today really is about understanding how street design shapes behavior. And shifting our focus from just blaming drivers to fixing the environment itself, prioritizing safety over speed in our local context.
It's a powerful lens to bring to our own neighborhoods. Remember those resources. Strongtowns.org/studio. Explore them. Maybe even talk to neighbors about starting a local analysis group.
So as we finish up, here's that final thought to chew on as you're out and about in Deer Park, La Porte, or Pasadena today. Pick one street, one intersection that just feels unsafe to you.
We all have one.
Now, based on what we talked about, what are maybe one or two design features? The width, the intersection layout, the lighting, anything that might be making it feel that way.
And then, just as a thought experiment, what's one small, maybe even temporary change you could imagine testing there to make it feel safer?
Just observe. Think critically about the spaces around you. It's the first step.